A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The thing that gets me about fenugreek, the thing I cannot get past, is that it's a bean.
It's a bean.
Trichinella foenum graecum, family Fabaceae. Same botanical family as chickpeas, lentils, fava beans. And yet for thousands of years we've treated it like a spice, a medicine, a vegetable, an industrial flavor additive. Everything except what it actually is.
Daniel sent us this one, The Culinary History of Fenugreek. And I think the reason this is worth unpacking right now is that fenugreek is having a moment. It's in sports supplements. It's in lactation cookies. Synthetic biology companies are engineering yeast to produce its signature flavor compound without the plant. But the actual history of this thing is stranger than any of the current trends.
And the entry point, the thing that hooks almost everyone, is the smell.
The maple syrup paradox.
You open a jar of fenugreek seeds, they smell like a spice cabinet. But you toast them in a dry pan for 30 seconds, and suddenly your kitchen smells like a Vermont pancake house. And here's the thing. It doesn't taste like maple syrup at all. It's bitter, nutty, slightly burnt. The aroma is a complete deception.
What's actually happening chemically? Because that disconnect between smell and taste, that's not normal for most spices.
It comes down to a single molecule called sotolon. S-O-T-O-L-O-N. It's a lactone, a cyclic ester, and it is one of the most potent flavor compounds known. Humans can detect it at concentrations as low as one part per billion. For context, that's like being able to taste a single drop in an Olympic swimming pool.
This is the thing that makes maple syrup smell like maple syrup.
It's the primary aroma compound in maple syrup, yes. But here's the chemical weirdness. Raw fenugreek seeds contain almost no sotolon. What they contain is an amino acid called 4-hydroxyisoleucine, which is almost unique to fenugreek. You don't find it in meaningful quantities in any other food source.
Meaning there are a few others.
Trace amounts in a couple of other legumes, but fenugreek is the only dietary source that matters. And when you apply heat, specifically dry heat like toasting, the 4-hydroxyisoleucine undergoes Strecker degradation. It reacts with sugars in the seed through the Maillard reaction, the same browning reaction that gives you toast crust and seared steak. And that reaction converts the amino acid into sotolon.
The maple syrup smell is literally a heat-activated transformation. It doesn't exist in the raw plant.
It's latent. The precursor is sitting there, waiting for fire. And that's why fenugreek has this split personality in cooking. Raw seeds taste one way, toasted seeds taste completely different, and the fresh leaves, which are called methi in Hindi, taste like something else entirely. Bitter, green, almost like a cross between spinach and celery.
This is the identity problem with fenugreek. Is it a spice? Is it a vegetable? Is it a legume you could theoretically eat by the bowlful?
You could, but you wouldn't enjoy it. The bitterness is intense. Which is why almost every culinary tradition that uses fenugreek uses it in small quantities. It's a background note. You miss it when it's gone, but you never want it to be the main event.
Like the bass player in a band. Nobody notices the bass until it stops.
Fenugreek is the bass player of the spice world, and the band sounds completely different depending on whether you're using the seeds, the toasted seeds, or the fresh leaves.
Let's talk about where this bass player came from. Because fenugreek is one of the oldest cultivated plants we have archaeological evidence for.
Tell Halua, an archaeological dig in northern Syria on the Euphrates. They found charred fenugreek seeds dating to roughly 6,000 BCE. That's 8,000 years ago. For context, that's before the domestication of the horse.
The Egyptians were using it by 1500 BCE. It shows up in the Ebers Papyrus, one of the oldest medical texts we have.
The Ebers Papyrus is remarkable. Circa 1550 BCE, a compendium of herbal remedies and surgical procedures. And fenugreek appears multiple times as a burn treatment, as a digestive aid, and as an embalming ingredient. They were literally using the same plant to season their food and preserve their dead.
That's a range, from biryani to mummification.
That dual-use pattern, food and medicine simultaneously, runs through fenugreek's entire history. The Greeks and Romans picked it up from the Egyptians and ran with it. Dioscorides, the first century Greek physician, prescribed fenugreek for inflammation of the uterus. Galen, a century later, recommended it for everything from baldness to gout.
Galen also thought bloodletting cured most diseases, so I'm not sure his endorsement carries the weight we might wish it did.
Fair, but here's what's interesting. Some of those ancient prescriptions weren't wrong. The Charaka Samhita, one of the foundational texts of Ayurveda, compiled around 300 BCE, prescribes fenugreek for what we would now recognize as diabetes-like symptoms: excessive thirst, frequent urination, sweet urine. And 3,000 years later, modern clinical trials confirmed that fenugreek does in fact lower blood glucose.
Because of the 4-hydroxyisoleucine.
That unique amino acid directly stimulates insulin secretion from pancreatic beta cells. The mechanism is completely different from most modern diabetes drugs, and the traditional healers had no way of knowing the chemistry, but they observed the effect and recorded it.
We've got a plant that starts in the Fertile Crescent, gets adopted by Egyptian, Greek, and Roman medicine, and then somehow becomes absolutely central to Indian cooking. How does a Mediterranean legume become a defining flavor of subcontinental cuisine?
The spice root migration. Persian traders carried fenugreek eastward, probably sometime in the first millennium BCE. Arab traders accelerated the spread after the rise of Islam. And what's fascinating is that different regions adopted completely different parts of the plant.
Give me the map here.
In India, the seeds became foundational. They're in virtually every curry powder, they're in panch phoron, the Bengali five-spice blend. But Indians also use the fresh leaves, methi, as a vegetable. You get methi paratha, methi chicken, aloo methi, the leaves are wilted into dishes the way you'd use spinach. In Ethiopia, fenugreek is a core component of berber, the spice blend that defines their entire cuisine, though it's always used in combination, never solo. In Georgia, it's essential to kamelis sonelli, dried spice, along with coriander, dill, marigold petals, and blue fenugreek, which is a different species entirely, Trigonella caerulea, milder and sweeter.
The same plant, three radically different culinary expressions. But then something weird happens. Europe forgets about it.
The medieval European collapse. After the Roman Empire fell, fenugreek virtually disappeared from European cooking. It survived only in monastic gardens, where monks cultivated it as a medicinal herb, not as food. For over 1,000 years, Europeans didn't cook with fenugreek. The breakdown of trade routes, the fact that fenugreek doesn't grow well in northern European climates, but I think the bigger reason is cultural. The Romans had always been ambivalent about fenugreek. The Latin name Fenum Graecum means Greek hay, which tells you exactly what they thought of it. It was animal fodder. Something you fed to livestock, not something you served at a banquet. And that stigma stuck for a millennium. Fenugreek didn't return to European cuisine until the 19th century, through colonial contact with Indian cooking. British colonists encountered fenugreek in curries and brought it back, but it never became a mainstream European ingredient.
Which sets up the 20th century twist. Because fenugreek's big comeback in the West wasn't through food at all. It was through industrial flavor chemistry.
This is where the story gets genuinely strange. During World War II, real maple syrup was rationed. It was expensive, it was scarce, and the food industry needed a cheap alternative for pancake syrups. Someone discovered that fenugreek extract, when combined with a few other compounds, produces a remarkably convincing maple flavor. And it never went away. Even today, something like 90% of commercial maple-flavored syrups, the kind you get at diners and fast food places, use fenugreek extract as their primary flavoring agent. Most people have consumed fenugreek-derived maple flavoring without ever knowing it.
There's something deeply strange about that. A plant that's been cultivated for 8,000 years, that defined the cuisines of entire civilizations, and its primary role in the modern West is to fake maple syrup for pancake topping.
It's the iceberg lettuce of the spice world. Ubiquitous, completely anonymous, and nobody realizes how much of it they're actually eating.
Fenugreek doesn't stay anonymous once it's inside you. This is the body odor phenomenon.
The maple syrup sweat. It's real, it's documented, and the chemistry is straightforward. When you consume fenugreek, the sotalon gets metabolized and excreted through your sweat glands and urine. For about 24 to 48 hours after eating a significant amount, your sweat literally smells like maple syrup.
Which sounds delightful until you realize the implications.
Because there's a rare genetic disorder called maple syrup urine disease, MSUD, where the body can't break down certain branched chain amino acids, and the urine and sweat take on a distinctive maple syrup odor. In infants, it can be life-threatening if undiagnosed. And the compound responsible for that smell is sotalon, the exact same molecule that gives fenugreek its aroma.
Eating fenugreek essentially gives you a temporary, benign version of a serious genetic disease.
Chemically speaking, yes. The sotalon from fenugreek follows the exact same metabolic pathway. It's one of those strange convergences where a food compound and a disease marker turn out to be identical.
This is why fenugreek has this persistent folk reputation as a lactation aid. Because new mothers who eat fenugreek, their babies smell like maple syrup.
The lactation industrial complex. Fenugreek is the most widely recommended herbal galactagogue in the world. You can buy fenugreek capsules at any pharmacy, any supplement store, marketed specifically for increasing breast milk supply. The global market for these products is enormous. The overall fenugreek market was valued at $8.2 billion in 2025.
Does it actually work?
The evidence is thinner than the marketing suggests. A 2023 Cochrane review, the gold standard for medical evidence synthesis, looked at all the available randomized controlled trials and concluded there was insufficient evidence to recommend fenugreek as a galactagogue. Some studies show an effect, some don't, and the quality of the research is generally poor.
The supplement industry doesn't care about the Cochrane review.
The supplement industry operates on tradition and anecdote. And to be fair, the tradition is ancient. Dioscorides was recommending fenugreek for lactation 2,000 years ago. The FDA sent a warning letter to a major supplement company in 2023, specifically for making unsubstantiated lactation claims about fenugreek products. But the market keeps growing anyway.
Because this might work and has been used for millennia is a powerful marketing message, even when the science says we're not sure.
It's not harmless. High doses of fenugreek can cause hypoglycemia, dangerously low blood sugar, in nursing infants. The same 4-hydroxyisoleucine that stimulates insulin secretion in adults also affects babies through breast milk.
You've got a plant that can lower blood sugar, potentially increase milk supply, make you smell like breakfast, and fake an entire flavor industry. And now, synthetic biology wants to take over.
Ginkgo Bioworks and several other synthetic biology companies are engineering yeast strains to produce sotalon directly, no fenugreek plants required. They ferment sugar, the yeast produces sotalon, and you get pure maple flavoring without ever growing a seed.
This matters because most of the world's fenugreek is grown in one place.
Rajasthan and Gujarat in India. Those two states supply roughly 80% of the global fenugreek market. Hundreds of thousands of smallholder farmers depend on fenugreek as a cash crop. And in 2025, when a synthetic biology startup announced commercial-scale sotalon production, fenugreek seed prices on the Indian Commodity Exchange dropped significantly.
We're looking at a potential collapse of an agricultural system that's been in place for thousands of years, because we've figured out how to grow the flavor in a vat.
Here's the tension. Synthetic sotalon is identical to natural sotalon. It's the same molecule. But fenugreek isn't just sotalon. The seed contains dozens of other compounds that contribute to its full flavor profile. Bitter notes, nutty notes, a slight celery-like character. A synthetic maple flavoring will never replicate the complexity of actual fenugreek in a curry or a berber blend.
Most people aren't eating fenugreek in curries. They're eating it in pancake syrup and sports supplements.
For those applications, the synthetic version is probably adequate. The question is whether the traditional culinary market is large enough to sustain the farmers if the industrial flavor market moves to fermentation.
That's the thread we should pull on when we come back. The economics, the sports nutrition angle, and whether any of the traditional health claims actually hold up. But I want to sit with this for a second. The sheer strangeness of a plant that's been with us since before the wheel, that shaped the flavor of entire civilizations, and that most people in the modern West have consumed without ever knowing its name.
It's the invisible backbone of a surprising amount of what we eat, and it's a bean. Never forget, it's a bean.
Yet, for all that, The 8,000-year history, the civilizations it shaped, the billion-dollar industries. Most people can't answer the simplest question about it. What is fenugreek? Herb? Spice? Vegetable? The answer is yes, which is not helpful.
It's the dual identity problem. Botanically, fenugreek is a legume. It's not a grass, not an herb in the botanical sense, it's a bean.
A bean that convinced the world it's a spice.
Because we mostly use the seeds. They're small, hard, angular, they look like tiny golden brown pebbles. You toast them, you grind them, and they function exactly like a spice in the kitchen. But the same plant also produces leaves, methai, that are cooked as a green vegetable. You can't do that with cumin or coriander.
It's a plant that refuses to stay in its lane.
This creates genuine confusion. In Indian cooking, you'll see recipes calling for methi leaves and fenugreek seeds as if they're two entirely different ingredients, which, culinarily, they are. The seeds are bitter, nutty, slightly burnt in character. The leaves are herbaceous, a little astringent, with a celery meets spinach quality. But neither one tastes like maple syrup.
Neither one tastes even remotely like maple syrup.
This is the chemical puzzle at the heart of fenugreek's story. The compound responsible for that maple aroma is sotalon, a lactone, specifically 3-hydroxy-4,5-dimethyl-2,5, H-furanone if you want to get technical. It's one of the most potent flavor compounds known to food science. The human nose can detect it at concentrations as low as 1 part per billion.
We're wired to notice this molecule.
We're extraordinarily sensitive to it, and here's where the chemistry gets interesting. Raw fenugreek seeds contain almost no sotalon. What they contain is a precursor, 4-hydroxyisoleucine, found in almost no other food source. When you apply dry toasting, the Maillard reaction and Strecker degradation kick in, and 4-hydroxyisoleucine gets converted into sotalon. The heat cleaves the amino acid at a particular bond, and the resulting fragment spontaneously cyclizes into that lactone ring structure. You can smell it happening within seconds of the seeds hitting a hot pan.
Which means that for most of human history, before we understood any of this chemistry, people still figured out that you have to toast the seeds, empirically, through trial and error, across multiple continents.
Independent discovery of the same preparation method. Every cuisine that uses fenugreek seeds, Indian, Ethiopian, Georgian, Persian, toasts them first. Nobody uses raw fenugreek seeds as a primary flavoring. The bitterness is too aggressive, and the aroma hasn't developed yet.
The flavor most people associate with fenugreek is actually a heat-activated transformation product, not something inherent to the plant itself.
That's what makes fenugreek unique among spices. With black pepper, the piperine is there from the start. With cinnamon, the cinnamaldehyde is present in the bark. But fenugreek's signature compound is latent. It's a potential that only gets unlocked by cooking.
Which explains why it took industrial chemistry to turn fenugreek into a mass-market maple flavoring. You can't just cold-press the seeds and get maple syrup.
The extraction process involves roasting, solvent extraction, and concentration. It's a multi-step industrial operation. And the resulting extract is so potent that a few drops can flavor an entire batch of pancake syrup.
Here's what I find unsettling. Sotalon is the exact same compound that gives real maple syrup its aroma. Not similar. Identical. The same molecule.
Your nose cannot tell the difference between sotalon from fenugreek and sotalon from maple syrup, because there is no difference. It's the same carbon-hydrogen-oxygen arrangement either way.
When you're eating those diner pancakes with the syrup in the little plastic peel-top cup, you're experiencing a flavor that is, at the molecular level, authentic maple. It just happens to have come from a bean grown in Rajasthan rather than a maple tree in Quebec.
That's the sleight of hand that built an entire industry. Nobody thinks about it. Nobody asks where the maple flavor comes from. It's just there, on the pancake, doing its job, completely anonymous. A bean pretending to be a spice, pretending to be maple syrup. It's the culinary equivalent of a triple agent. That triple agent act goes back a very long way. The earliest archaeological evidence comes from Tell Halula in Syria, seeds dated to around 6000 BCE, placing it among the earliest domesticated legumes in the Fertile Crescent. By 1500 BCE, it shows up in Egyptian tombs, both as an embalming ingredient and as a culinary item. The Ebers Papyrus lists fenugreek as a treatment for burns and a digestive aid. The Egyptians were using it for the dead and the living simultaneously.
multitasking from the very beginning.
Then the Greeks and Romans got hold of it. Dioscorides prescribed fenugreek for uterine pain, inflammation, and baldness. Galen picked up the same thread. They established this idea that fenugreek was medicine first and food second, and that framing stuck for 2,000 years.
Which is interesting because the Romans also gave it the name we still use, Phaenum Graecum, Greek hay, which is not exactly flattering. They literally named it after animal fodder.
The Romans thought of it as something you fed to livestock, unless you were sick, in which case suddenly it was medicine. It occupied this strange liminal space, too bitter to be a proper food, too useful to ignore entirely.
How does a plant the Romans dismissed as horse feed end up at the center of Indian cooking?
The spice roots. Persian and Arab traders carried fenugreek eastward from the Mediterranean basin, probably sometime in the first millennium BCE. And when it reached the Indian subcontinent, something interesting happened. Indian cooks started using both parts of the plant. The seeds went into spice blends and tadkas, and the leaves, methai, became a vegetable in their own right.
Whereas Mediterranean cooking mostly stuck with the seeds.
That divergence is still visible today. Ethiopian berber uses ground-toasted seeds for that slightly bitter burnt caramel depth. Georgian Kameli Suneli uses it the same way. Persian gourmet sabzi uses the dried leaves. But India is the only place where both forms are equally central to the cuisine.
The Charaka Samhita was prescribing it for what we'd now call diabetes symptoms around 300 BCE.
3,000 years before any modern clinical trial confirmed the blood glucose lowering effect. They had no idea about 4-hydroxyzoleucine or insulin secretion or pancreatic beta cells. They just observed that it worked.
Trial and error across centuries.
And then Europe forgot about it.
This is the part I find baffling. How does a plant that was in Egyptian tombs and Greek medical texts just vanish from a continent?
The collapse of the Roman Empire fragmented the trade networks and the culinary knowledge that depended on them. Fenugreek isn't native to northern Europe. It needs Mediterranean or semi-arid conditions. Without Roman supply chains, the plant simply stopped arriving in northern kitchens. It survived only in monastic gardens, where monks maintained it as a medicinal herb based on copies of Dioscorides and Galen. For over 1,000 years, fenugreek in Europe was a monastery plant. It didn't return to European cuisine until the 19th century, when colonial trade with India brought it back. Ironically, as an exotic oriental spice, even though it had originated in the Mediterranean.
It left home, became famous abroad, and came back as a foreigner.
The culinary equivalent of a band that only gets big after moving to another country. But I want to go deeper on the chemistry of the toasting process, because this is where everything comes together. The Maillard reaction and Strecker degradation convert 4-hydroxyzoleucine into sotalon. The heat cleaves the amino acid, the fragment cyclizes into that lactone ring, and you can smell it happening within seconds. That distinctive maple caramel aroma is the sound of molecules being torn apart and reassembled in real time.
Which means that every cuisine that toasts fenugreek seeds independently discovered the same chemical transformation without knowing any of the chemistry.
They all landed on roughly the same technique. Medium dry pan, seeds only, 30 to 60 seconds until fragrant. Any longer and the seeds burn, turning the sotalon into bitter, acrid compounds. The window between perfectly toasted and ruined is maybe 15 seconds.
Like a culinary high-wire act that humans on 3 continents figured out through nothing but trial, error, and a lot of burnt seeds. That same spirit of improvisation carried us from maize to maple, because after leaving fenugreek in the 19th century, it returned to Europe as an exotic spice after a 1,000-year monastery exile. But the real weirdness starts in the 20th century. World War II. Real maple syrup is rationed, sugar is tight, and the food industry needs a cheap alternative for pancake syrup.
Enter fenugreek extract. The same sotalon that Indian cooks had been unlocking with dry toasting for millennia suddenly became an industrial commodity. You could roast fenugreek seeds at scale, extract the sotalon with solvents, concentrate it, and add a few drops to a vat of corn syrup. Boom! Imitation maple syrup that your nose cannot distinguish from the real thing.
Today, 90% of commercial maple syrups still use fenugreek-derived sotalon. Most people eating pancakes on a Sunday morning have never tasted real maple syrup in their lives.
They don't know it. The label says maple syrup or maple flavored syrup, and nobody reads the fine print. The fenugreek is invisible. It's the ultimate background ingredient, a bean from Rajasthan flavoring breakfast in Cincinnati, and not a single diner asks questions.
Until their sweat starts smelling like pancakes.
This is my favorite part. Sotalon is excreted through sweat glands and urine essentially unchanged. So if you eat enough fenugreek, whether in curry or as a supplement, your body starts emitting a faint maple syrup odor. It's harmless, but it's deeply strange.
It mimics a serious genetic disorder.
Maple syrup urine disease, exactly. It's a rare condition where the body can't break down certain amino acids, and one of the metabolic byproducts that builds up is sotalon. The disease gets its name from the distinctive maple syrup smell of affected infants' urine. Fenugreek consumption produces the exact same compound through a completely different pathway.
Eating enough fenugreek gives you the benign, temporary, dietary version of a genetic disease. That's an unsettling fact.
It freaks out new mothers constantly, because fenugreek is widely recommended as a galactagogue. Women are told to take fenugreek capsules to increase milk supply, and then suddenly their newborn smells like maple syrup, and they panic thinking it's the genetic disorder.
Which brings us to the billion-dollar question. Does fenugreek actually work for lactation?
The 2023 Cochrane Review looked at all available studies and concluded there is insufficient evidence to recommend fenugreek as a galactagogue. After centuries of traditional use, after a supplement market worth hundreds of millions annually, the best evidence says we don't actually know if it works.
The supplements are everywhere. Every lactation consultant, every mommy blog, every drugstore shelf.
In 2023, the FDA sent a warning letter to a major supplement company for making unsubstantiated lactation claims about their fenugreek product. The company was using language like clinically proven to increase breast milk production, and the FDA said, show us the evidence. They couldn't.
The traditional knowledge says it works, but the clinical trials say maybe, sometimes, for some women, and we can't prove it.
There's a real safety concern that gets overlooked. Fenugreek lowers blood glucose. We know that mechanism, 4-hydroxyisoleucine stimulating insulin secretion. If a nursing mother takes high doses, her blood sugar drops. And if enough of those compounds pass into the breast milk, the infant can experience hypoglycemia. There are case reports of this happening.
The very thing that makes fenugreek useful for diabetes makes it potentially risky for breastfeeding.
The dose makes the poison, as always, but nobody's regulating the dose in these supplements. The 4-hydroxyisoleucine content varies wildly between products. Some capsules have almost none. Some have concentrated extracts that hit like a pharmaceutical.
Which connects to the other big supplement market.
Fenugreek has become a staple in sports nutrition, specifically for testosterone-boosting claims. The mechanism they cite is the 4-hydroxyisoleucine improving insulin sensitivity, which theoretically creates a more anabolic hormonal environment. A 2024 meta-analysis pooled the data from multiple randomized controlled trials and found a modest but statistically significant increase in free testosterone in men taking fenugreek extracts.
Modest meaning what exactly?
Single-digit percentage increases. Not nothing, but not the kind of gains you get from actual hormonal intervention. It's enough to be statistically detectable, not enough to transform your physique. But the supplement industry markets it like it's a natural steroid.
The raw material for all of this. The lactation supplements, the testosterone boosters, the pancake syrup, comes overwhelmingly from two Indian states, Rajasthan and Gujarat.
80% of the world's fenugreek. Smallholder farmers, mostly, growing it as a winter crop in semi-arid conditions where not much else thrives. For thousands of years, this has been a stable, if unglamorous, agricultural livelihood.
Now there's a lab that can make sotalon without the plant.
Ginkgo Bioworks and several other synthetic biology companies have engineered yeast strains that produce sotalon through fermentation. You feed the yeast sugar, it spits out sotalon. No fields, no farmers, no monsoon dependency, no 8,000-year agricultural tradition. Just a stainless steel tank.
In 2025, when one of these startups announced commercial-scale production, fenugreek seed prices on the Indian commodity exchange collapsed.
Dropped by over 30% in a matter of weeks. The market saw the future and priced it in immediately. If you can brew maple flavor in a vat for a fraction of the cost of growing, harvesting, and processing fenugreek seeds, the industrial buyers switch.
The synthetic sotolon is just one molecule. It doesn't have the bitterness, the nuttiness, the complexity that comes from the whole seed.
That's the tension. The food industry doesn't want complexity. It wants a consistent, cheap, single-note flavor. It can dose precisely. Real fenugreek is a symphony. Synthetic sotolon is a ringtone. But for pancake syrup, the ringtone is good enough.
The farmers in Rajasthan who've been growing this plant since before recorded history are now competing with yeast in a bioreactor in Boston.
The yeast doesn't need irrigation. It doesn't need a minimum support price. It doesn't get hit by drought or locusts or commodity speculation. It just sits there, eating sugar, producing the exact molecule that gave fenugreek its economic value.
8,000 years of domestication, and the final act might be a vat.
If that's the backdrop, farmers competing with yeast, tradition versus tank. Let's pull out what actually matters for someone who just wants to cook with this stuff, or who's staring at a supplement bottle wondering if it does anything.
Because we've covered 8,000 years of history, some unsettling body chemistry, and an agricultural crisis. Time to land the plane.
First, the kitchen. If you're cooking with fenugreek, the form is everything. Whole seeds, dry toasted in a pan, that's how you unlock sotolon. 30 to 60 seconds over medium heat, no oil, just the seeds. You'll smell it when it happens. That maple caramel aroma means the 4-hydroxyisoleucine has done its chemical transformation.
If you miss that 15-second window you mentioned earlier,
you'll know. It goes from fragrant to acrid fast. Burnt fenugreek doesn't taste like maple. It tastes like regret. Start a new batch.
Whole seeds, dry toast them. What about the leaves?
Methai, the fresh leaves, are a completely different ingredient. They're bitter, green, almost arugula-like, with a hay note. You treat them like spinach or any cooking green, but here's the key. Add them at the end. Long cooking destroys their character and amplifies the bitterness in an unpleasant way. Fold them in during the last few minutes, just enough to wilt.
Seeds get heat up front, leaves get heat at the end.
Never substitute one for the other. Dried fenugreek leaves, kasuri methi, are their own third category. They're crumbled over finished dishes as a garnish, like you'd use dried oregano. The aroma is concentrated but different from toasted seeds. So you've got three distinct ingredients from one plant, and they behave nothing alike.
Three tools in one toolbox. But you have to know which one you're holding.
Second takeaway. If you're using fenugreek for health purposes, the dosage question is everything, and most people get it wrong. Traditional preparations, soaking seeds overnight, making a tea from the leaves, have wildly variable concentrations of 4-hydroxyisoleucine. One batch might have 10 times the active compounds of another, depending on the seed variety, the soil, the harvest conditions.
Which makes traditional dosing essentially guesswork.
The supplement industry isn't much better. Some products use whole seed powder, which has relatively low concentration. Some use standardized extracts at 50% saponins or higher. The label might say fenugreek on both bottles, but pharmacologically, they're different substances.
What should someone actually look for?
For blood sugar support, the clinical trials that showed real effects use standardized extracts with a known 4-hydroxyisoleucine content, typically in the range of 500 to 1,000 milligrams of extract, standardized to contain at least 40% 4-hydroxyisoleucine. If the bottle doesn't specify the extract ratio or the active compound concentration, you're buying fenugreek-flavored placebo. Given the Cochrane Review's conclusion of insufficient evidence, and the real risk of infant hypoglycemia at high doses, I'd say the takeaway is caution, not enthusiasm. If a lactation consultant recommends it, ask about dosage and monitoring. If the bottle says clinically proven, check who did the proving, because the FDI has already flagged that language as unsubstantiated.
The supplement aisle is a minefield where tradition, marketing, and actual pharmacology overlap in confusing ways.
Which brings us to the third takeaway, and it connects directly to what we were saying about synthetic sotolon. Pay attention to ingredient labels, because we're about to see fenugreek flavor in everything.
The yeast-made stuff.
Isolated sotolon is already cheaper than fenugreek extract, and that gap is only going to widen. Food manufacturers are going to start putting natural maple flavor, derived from fermentation, not from trees or fenugreek seeds, into everything from protein bars to oat milk to breakfast cereals. And it'll be legal to call it natural because fermentation qualifies.
It's one note. You said it yourself. Real fenugreek is a symphony. Synthetic sotalon is a ringtone.
That's what the label won't tell you. If you're cooking something where fenugreek is a central flavor, an Ethiopian berber, a proper Indian curry, you need the whole seed because the bitterness and the nuttiness and the slight burnt caramel complexity are doing real work. Isolated sotalon gives you the maple note and nothing else. It's the difference between hearing a single piano key and hearing the chord.
The culinary equivalent of a MIDI file versus a live recording.
The practical rule, if fenugreek is listed as a whole ingredient, fenugreek seeds, kasseri methi, you're getting the real plant. If you see natural flavor and the product tastes vaguely maple-like, you're probably getting yeast-derived sotalon. Neither one will hurt you, but they're not interchangeable in cooking.
To crystallize this, toast your seeds, wilt your leaves at the end, read your supplement labels for standardization, and know when you're getting the plant versus when you're getting the molecule.
Appreciate that the molecule and the plant have completely different stories. One is 8,000 years of human agriculture, the other is a few years of metabolic engineering. They smell the same, but that's about where the overlap ends.
Here's the question I keep coming back to. 8,000 years of domestication, and the final act might be a vat. But is it actually the final act?
I don't think so, and the reason is exactly what we just said about the difference between the molecule and the plant. Synthetic sotalon is one compound. Fenugreek seeds contain dozens of bioactive molecules, alkaloids, saponins, flavonoids, that all interact. The food industry might not care about that complexity, but traditional cuisines absolutely do.
The traditional cuisines aren't disappearing.
They're growing, actually. Global demand for authentic spice blends, berberet, panch foron, proper curry powders, keeps rising. Those applications can't use synthetic sotalon as a shortcut because the bitter nutty notes are structurally necessary to the dish. You'd notice the absence.
The farmer's in.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.